Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Lemonade Podcast. This is your host, Stephanie Williams, and I have another special guest for the second episode. No, I'm sorry, the third episode of. See, January was so long. I can't even keep up with how many episodes I've done. January was like at least 4 months long, so I would have at least done like 10 episodes, right? But I have with me. Wait, you know what? I'm going to have to edit this part out. But I wanted to make confirmation on how to pronounce your name. You know, we'll leave this in. Vida Ayala, no, right?
Fine. Yeah, that's great. Vida Ayala. Vida, yeah, perfect. Oh, you got it.
I was going to be really upset because I definitely called a friend like, so you know I was saying your name wrong for 5 years. Okay, so yes, I have the wonderful Vida Ayala with me, which you just heard me. Go ahead and find out, make sure I was making the right pronunciation before I made a total ass of myself. So how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. You know, it's funny because my name is very short. Well, I shortened it because it's actually very long and very Hispanic, but it's amazing how many times people will mess up my name, my last name specifically. So I appreciate it. A, you've been saying it right along, and B, thank you for asking.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure, because I know like the A and the Y, usually you're going to get an I sound, but I have a friend that for the long, like I knew that's how her name was supposed to be pronounced, but everyone in the office would say it wrong so much all the time that like for a good 2 or 3 weeks, I would like interchange between the correct way to say it and the wrong way to say it, because somebody would say it wrong as hell, and it just threw me. And after that, I was like, nope. When you see those two letters together, figure it out. It's definitely not A. So that is my history with that. But thank you so much for coming on. I have been meaning to actually send you a DM to ask you if you'd be interested in coming on after reading your story in Bitch Planet, the featurette, which I'm pretty sure you all are tired of me talking about. But that's too bad because I really, really enjoy the entire anthology collection, but definitely your story. It was just...
Well, thank you so much.
I was up in the middle of the night reading it. Yeah, no, I loved it. The artwork went amazing with it, and it just kind of moved quickly. So if they ever do make a Bitch Planet TV series or whatever, and they maybe fashion it after the triple feature anthologies, then my vote for that story to be like the first episode.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me. That was a really interesting story to kind of get going, and I wasn't sure how it would land. And the artist is incredible. She did the colors as well, I believe. She and a flatter, and I got it back, and I was like, "All right, at least it looks good. We'll see. We'll see if people like the words, but at least it looks really good." Like, she was a very dynamic artist. So.
Yeah, well, it looked good and it also read very well. So, no, just seriously, kudos to that. And real quick, because I know we're supposed to save this, but since I'm all out of order anyway, how did you get involved with the Bitch Planet triple feature? Can you kind of tell us how that went down?
Yeah, sure, of course. So I was at Emerald City, I think it was Emerald City, Comic-Con. And I have a very good friend who is a Valkyrie. Do you know what the Valkyries are, or do I have to prime people? I forget.
Let's pretend that I do. Yeah.
Okay. It just really quickly, the Valkyries are a group of comics retail women who kind of support each other, and there's like a Facebook group and stuff like that, I guess. But anyway, a good friend of mine is a Valkyrie, and she knows Kelly Sue and Matt Fraction very well, and she did an intro, which was very sweet, because Kelly Sue, I'm a very big fan of hers from way, way back, and Kelly Sue was like, "Oh, I've heard your name. Why don't we talk about stuff?" And so, you know, as things go, we ended up talking via email, and she was like, "I'm doing this thing. I would love to have you on. I like your stuff." And the rest is history. It was just that lucky.
That is amazing. Oh, that is really amazing. Okay, so that's pretty dope. Now, if I see Kelly at a Heroes Con again this year, not next year, but I'll definitely be like, yeah, so I interviewed someone that you brought on for your for your triple features, and she told me the story, and it was really, really dope. So definitely
you should also be like, I write comics too, because I heard that you're also working on a little something, something. So, you know, don't forget to talk about yourself. But,
no, I won't. But it's another thing. I don't know what's up with me in that. I just got to get a little bit more confident and just have more faith that I am a storyteller. But I've been telling myself that every day. So
you definitely we're talking are, about so.
Thank you. Well, enough about me. What is your relationship with comics? Like, what is your origin story and how you, you know, came to know the art form, and just, you know, tell us, what was a young Vita reading?
So I guess I've told the story maybe once or twice, but my first comic was... So Fisher-Price did this thing in the 80s. I'm a little older than you are. We're almost contemporaries, but you're a little younger. Where they would take graphic novels of like literature that were made, I guess, by other companies. I can't remember exactly the imprint, but they would basically package them for children. Like, they wouldn't change the contents. They would just take the graphic novel, put Fisher-Price on it, and then they'd sell it with a cassette tape. And the cassette tape was an audiobook of the comic. So it would just read all of the text that was on the page. And my dad decided that, you know, my parents decided they were going to get me one. And it was 1001 Arabian Nights, which was a very interesting choice because, again, the stories weren't really edited for children.
That's hilarious.
You know. You have this king who is definitely going to murder this woman unless she like placates him, which I was like, okay. But it was really cool because, you know, most of the stories involve characters of color. The main, you know, thread of the story is this woman who's saving herself. So I got to, you know, I got to know comics in that way. And then my real love for comics started when I was, I want to say 7 or 8. I forget the exact age now because that was like when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, but
no.
My mom bought me a Wonder Woman comic, and I was convinced immediately that she was Puerto Rican. And I know I've told this story before, but yeah, I looked at her and I was like, definitely one of my cousins for sure. Like 100%. She's wearing like, you know, coochie cutting, like, shorts with stars on them and like a halter top with like a gold like eagle on it, and she has bangles and a tiara. She's 100% my cousin, so she's one of us. And like, embarrassingly, I thought for like the next 10 years that she was definitely Puerto Rican, which was wrong, but that was how I got introduced to comic books.
But you know what,
you know.
Yeah, for the longest I thought that Wonder Woman was Latinx, so I don't, you're not the, and yeah, don't feel bad about that.
Apparently,
in fact,
she
I still wish
Spanish
that was
a couple
the case.
Of times.
Yes, she says hola so many times in the earlier comics, but you know what? I won't even, no, I'm so serious because that's what I was like, oh, well, that's different. That's cool. I'm not reading another white woman, but
that wasn't my mama case. Had to sit me down and was like, no, let me break your heart. I'm very sorry. She was like, she's Greek. I was like, no, that's a metaphor. She's not an Amazon like that. She's like, no, honey. She talked to the gods. I was like, all right, okay. But then I fell in love with like,
oh, that's funny.
Storm like was my homegirl for like the longest time. When I was a little kid, I didn't have an imaginary friend, but I pretended to have an imaginary friend, and it was Storm. I was like, nope, just X-Men. That's what I want. I just want Aurora Monroe to like follow me around and do cool stuff. So that's gonna be the case.
I love it.
Did not know I'd come onto this show to embarrass myself, but thank you.
No, there is no, and listen, there is no embarrassing on this show. Okay, real quick, since you brought up Storm, I have to ask you, and this is probably going to determine whether or not this episode continues or it's ended. Are you are you a Storm and a T'Challa shipper?
I am not. I'm a huge Storm Forge person.
All right.
I love Forge.
Podcast, it continues.
Okay. I was like, did I pass? I'm just going to tell the truth and hope for the best. Life death was very important to me as like a young punk kid. And like Forge was a genius and a Native American. And I was like, oh, that's dope. Like, this is everything I want for Storm. Someone that will treat her like respectfully and also is a genius. So,
but yeah, I mean,
you know,
even though it's kind of his fault that she lost her powers, I'm also blaming Rogue for that. That whole life death part one and two is, they were everything. Okay. Well, I'm glad that is off my spirit. Okay. Just wondering.
I probably get in trouble for it, for not shipping them. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are like, no, what the heck? But I can't do it.
I stand with you in unison, and many others do. No, I can't. Okay. Mm-mm. Well, I'm sorry, y'all. I mean, you can go ahead and tweet at me, but I mean, you should know my stance on this already. I don't know how many times I've slandered T'Challa's name when it comes to Storm. So, okay. So when is your first time sitting down and either saying, hey, I want to write comics, or so when's the first time that the realization hit you that, hey, I could do this?
So I worked comic retail for about 10 years.
Okay.
And you know, when you work retail, you have to do things to keep yourself from going bananas. But especially comics retail, what you end up doing with, you know, your fellow coworkers and inmates, because it's sometimes like prison because it's retail, is you talk comics and then you start going, all right, well, what would you do if, you know, you could write this character? What would you do if blah, 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 blah? And it just like, me and my sibling Danny would just do that all of the time. And then about 2012, I was working at Forbidden Planet with Matt Rosenberg. And he was like, you come in early every day and you sit in the basement and you write stuff. You should just pitch for comics. And I was like, people like me don't really write comics, man. Like, it's okay. And he was like, stop. Like, he was like, I don't want to hear that. You're doing it. And he made me pitch to Black Mask, actually. And then he took me around New York Comic Con that year. And he was like, I'm going to introduce you to everyone I know, you know, and that's just it. Like, that's what's going to happen. And so he took me around and I was like, you know what? Maybe I can do this. There was a surprising amount of people that I could identify with doing stuff behind the scenes. And it's hard to see that, you know, sometimes, but I was like, you know what? No, I'm going to do it. And so 2012, I decided that this was going to be a thing. Yeah. Before then, I was writing just for myself in my notebook and hoping one day I'd drop my notebook and someone would see my writing and give me a book deal. That was like the ridiculous high school style dream.
Thank you for the self-drag on me, or drag for me. Thanks, because I definitely have a little notebook. Now I'm actually starting to, you know, do stuff with it, but a little notebook where I'm like, you know, if I drop this one day or accidentally upload it, maybe someone will see it and give me a job.
That is apparently a common thing. So you're not alone. And guess what? You can do it. So there you go.
Yes, yes. So I guess fast forward a little bit. I think I remember the first time I came across your name when I think there was something either, I don't know, CBR or one of the comic book websites posted about it's DC's talent development program. And I remember seeing either a list of names or something, but I do remember seeing your name there because there was, what was it? Suicide Squad, Most Wanted. This was around the same time.
Yes.
So I do. And it was like the only reason why I wanted to like read it, because I was like, oh, a name that doesn't read as male. That's cool. So let's see what happens here. Because, you know what I mean? And I'm like, also not a cishet white male. That's cool. So let's see what's going on here. So, yes. And that's kind of how I got, introduced to you and your writing. And then I've been you know, just stalking DC and just seeing, you know, what what things you're going to be attached to. So the first full thing that I read from you was Wonder Woman Annual 1, which I really, really loved. And you got me to, like, you know, pick up some Wonder Woman Rebirth every now and again, even though you're not, you know, just writing for her. But I was like, okay, Wonder Woman, I see you. I'm gonna start reading again, because you brought up some things about Diana that I've always loved. I've always enjoyed about her. So thank you.
No, thank you. That was a. It was actually amazing to be asked to do that. It was funny because the annual, I had a 10-pager in there, and it came out 2 days before the movie. And I was like, I hope people buy it. Like, that would be really nice. DC actually was my first published work. And I did the first writer's workshop, which was a much bigger class than what they do now. It was something like 13 students or so. And it was wild. Yeah, it was like a real like college class, and it was taught or led by Scott Snyder, who actually teaches courses, so it makes sense. But after the program, they asked me if I wanted to do the Suicide Squad Most Wanted. And they were like, "Would you be interested in writing Amanda Waller?" And I was like, in my mind, I'm screaming, yes. Right? Because it's the wall. I was like, but I was like, I guess. Yeah, that sounds good. It was the only reason I did that is because I was talking to a good friend of mine. You get to know each other during the workshop. But no, they let me do it. And I just made one very small request. I was like, hey, can she be like as broad as she is tall? Like, is that cool? Can she be really big? And they were like, oh, yeah, that's what we want. And I was like, oh, thank God. I just want like Fridge Waller, just like, oh, man. And so they let me do that. And then I guess they liked my stuff enough to keep asking me back. I co-wrote an issue of Supergirl that should be coming out second week of March, I believe, with Steve Orlando, where I get to help introduce a non-binary character of color, actually, which is pretty cool. So. Yeah, they let me do stuff.
The dates, it's marked on my calendar since I saw it, you know, seen it announced on your Twitter. So I think it's available for pre-order. If it's not, then I'll be pre-ordering it. So I'm really looking forward to reading that.
I just got the pages back, and it's really pretty.
Good, good, good. Wait, who's the artist?
Jamal Campbell. And I think he is also doing color. And mm-hmm. they are gorgeous. I literally got the pages and I was like, oh my God, so brown, so beautiful. There's so many brown people in this book.
Yeah, I can't wait. Because he did that the Vixen one shot, and that was gorgeous. So his artwork is just really amazing. Okay, now February, well, I want you to kind of not go quickly because it's, you know, Black History Month, but at the same time, I kind of want to get to March. So now I feel torn. Thank you. Thank you so much for making me want to speed up time when I want to slow it down.
There's great stuff coming out in February, I promise, from other people.
I know, but still. Oh, wait. You know what? You're right. Well, no, because, okay, so I don't want to be rude and like skip over your other work because it's amazing as well, but I really want to talk about The Wilds. But before I do, I am curious as to your experience for writing for Batgirl.
Oh, sure. That was awesome. I was approached by the editors and they said, hey, we'd love you to do, you know, 20 pages worth, which is a standard full issue. And, you know, give us some ideas. And I was like, all right, I want to talk about Babs and friendship and all these things. And they let me do a story of her reconnecting with her best friend. And it was, I mean, it's a weird kind of story. I brought back the villain that I wanted to punch in the face the most from the first like run of that book, or the first like Burnside run of that book. And it, I don't know. I just, some certain kinds of people make me want to punch him in the face. And I think, you know who they are. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be too specific,
sure,
but that was a phenomenal experience where I got to reconnect to two characters who, you know, superheroes, they tend to, we don't tend to see as many of the tender moments with their non-superhero friends and family. And I wanted to kind of write about that side of Babs because that's important to her as a character. I've been a big fan of Barbara Gordon for my whole life. So.
Yeah. And I really love that aspect of the story because, like, we don't get that a lot and it's really weird. I think we talked about it on Missy Knight's Uninformed Afro, especially for some of the Black women superheroes and characters in comics. Like, you don't really see their friendships with either other Black women or just other women, period, but definitely other Black women. So, in their families, because I think Monica Rambeau is the only one where you get to see her relationship with her parents, which is always a dope aspect of her to me. So that's very true. And honestly, I think those stories that are able to, you know, kind of fit that into all of the action that's going on and the supervillain that needs to be taken down are some of the best series and runs. So that's pretty dope. Okay. So enough about DC. No shade. But I would like to talk about The Wilds because I think you let me read it before Christmas or it was like after Christmas. I don't know when it was, but all I know is that it was like the only thing I could think about for like 2 weeks. And I was very appreciative of you even thinking of me to like read a the first issue before it came out. But I was very, very thankful and grateful to you for allowing me to do that. And I just love the story. Like, I really love the game The Last of Us. And I've always kind of been a fan of, just kind of that kind of post-apocalyptic setting for whatever reason. Like, I don't watch The Walking Dead anymore. But I was just really, really, really love the introduction to the world. And I'm getting ready to talk about your comic like you didn't write it. So actually, let me shut up. let you talk about The Wilds. And then I'll continue to gush afterwards.
Thank you so much. I respect your opinion a lot. And one of the reasons I was excited for it to exist and I wanted, you know, people that I liked to like just have it. But also one of the reasons why I sent it to you, because I was like, yo, if it's not good, she'll let me know. she'll be nice about it, but she'll definitely be like, you got some lettuce in your teeth, man. I got to like let you know.
Real tame thanks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I knew like I could trust your opinion on it. And I was like, maybe there's enough time to save it if she doesn't like it. So there's a few people that are my barometer for whether or not this is going to work out. And I was like, all right, sweet. All right, I passed that test. All right. So The Wilds is a book that takes place in a post-apocalyptic America, New York State specifically. So the thing that ended the world for humanity was a plague. And it killed a bunch of people and then it mutated a bunch of people into what is essentially zombies. It's like you saying The Last of Us is kind of really good because that is a very understandable kind of transition. So they shamble around and they have plants growing out of their face or out of any open orifice. Actually, they just plants everywhere. Emily Pearson, the artist, who is incredible, and you wouldn't believe that this is her first book, but it is. She does amazing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the first one for her. Yeah, we met on Twitter, which is the great equalizer, and we got to talking, and you know, when we decided we wanted to work together, I had this idea, which was very different at the time in terms of what the zombies looks like and stuff like that. And she was like, I really love nature and mutated things. And I was like, I'll make it work. Okay. and this is what we came up with together. But anyway, so thematically, the story is about how certain types of people, namely people of color and especially women of color, are kind of expected to do all of this emotional and physical labor without benefiting from it at all. We expect, marginalized people to just do all the work and not complain and not get anything in return and never rest. And so the main character, Daisy, goes through this journey from kind of buying into that idea. And sometimes we do, where it's like, well, if I don't do it, then, you know, things are going to collapse. Or if I don't, you know, give and give and give, then no one will. And she moves from that kind of idea of, you know, swallowing the bullshit line to being like, no, wait a second. This is, no, I deserve rest. I deserve not to be, you know, used up until I die. I deserve all of these things. But because no one wants to hear that, there's a bunch of dope looking zombies to kind of make that go down smooth. So it's, you know, people who love horror or zombies or video games, that kind of stuff, are going to find stuff that they like in it, because I also like those things. And I think that post-apocalyptic situations are really great for kind of bearing the really nasty part of us and also the really good part of us. And because it's an extreme situation of survival, you cut away all the nonsense and you get to the heart of, you know, who we are and why we make the decisions that we make. So I said it in that, because I didn't want to have to tap dance around the issues. The runners, so humanity has fallen. Nature is taking back the planet. Humans survive in little kind of communities that are settlements. They're walled off little cities. And, you know, the runners live in this specialized settlement called the compound. The compound is the black market meets the USPS. They go out and they find cool shit and they bring it back. And they also, if there is any movement between settlements, they ferry people around. So the runners are the ones that do all the damn work. And the runners very clearly are brown people and women and queer people.
Of course.
The people that we throw away. And that's I'm not shy about coming out and saying it. And so you very clearly see the divide in the people that live in the compound. And you see that they consider these runners as disposable. And so they go out and take all these risks, because if they didn't, how would people get from settlement to settlement? How would they get new stuff? Right. So that's the line that they're fed. So Daisy, a runner, has to make this decision to be like, hey, wait a second. Why don't we all start taking these like risks? So we don't, you know, so it's not just us dying out there.
So then that tells me that. Yeah. So guys, yeah, everything she just said is actually kind of, I'm sorry, let me start over. Everything that Vita just said is pretty much kind of encapsulated in that first issue, and you really get a taste for that in the first issue, which I really, really enjoyed. Because sometimes, you know, the first issue of a comic, like, you really don't know, well, it's a problem, you really don't know where it's kind of going to go or have an idea of where it's headed thematically. So I did really appreciate that that was just really set up so well. So I think it's gonna be great. I really hope a lot of people pick it up and read it. You're really, really right about the fact, if you really enjoy you know, video games and just post-apocalyptic settings and zombies and all that, that's something that you're really going to gravitate towards. Because like I said, after I read it, I've been thinking about it and what's supposed to happen in the second issue for like 2-3 weeks. It was like heavy on my mind, and it took everything in me to like not message you and say, hey, you got any more of that issue too, while scratching my neck. So
I will send it to you as soon as I have it. It is almost done with production now, so I will send it to you. But yeah, I wanted people to know exactly what they were getting in the first issue, because I don't want to lie to people. I want, you know, you pick up the first issue, she's brown, she's queer, there are zombies, and the zombies may not actually be the most dangerous thing there. Like, I wanted people to get that. And I wanted people to see the relationships and the dynamics between the people, you know, the runners and the other people as much as possible, because, you know, those relationships are really important to any story. They hopefully will all have a character arc. At least they will all change, you know, from issue to issue. And I wanted to show you the baseline for everyone while I could. It's a little longer too. It's a 28 page issue. So you're going to get more bang for your buck. Cause I wanted to make sure that I had the space to be like, here you go, guys. Like, here's my pitch.
It is, I mean, it's appreciated. And honestly, after the 20th page, I'm like, wait, why is it not more? Where's the rest? So again, like I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to just see how Daisy's story just kind of unfolds, and we see her go on this journey. So I do have one question. What is that process like? Pitching and just trying to, you know, put something out, you know, just, yeah, pitching. How is that? Like when you're not pitching in like a DC or Marvel setting.
You know,
or is it
that's
the
a really
same?
Good question. No, it's not. Not at all. Pitching for kind of creator owned stuff is an interesting process because different companies have a format for what they like to see in terms of the actual physical pitch, but mm-hmm. you have to basically figure out how to give an overview of what the book is about, the themes and metaphors, and then, you know, prove to people why it would be a really dope series. Like that's, you just really got to sell it. And, you know, it's something that takes a long time to learn. And the best way to learn it, A, is to do it, of course. But B is also to talk to other pros. This is what I was doing when I was not really in the industry yet. Not that I am, but when I would go to conventions, I'd be like, all right, tell me about your stories and how you pitch it. Tell me about this and how you pitch it. And, you know, asking people for examples of their pitches is a really good one too. But yeah, you have to figure out how to boil everything down without losing what makes your story important. And then if you can get an artist to like do designs and stuff, that also goes a long way.
I can definitely see that. I mean, it's still, that idea still seems kind of overwhelming to me, the pitching part. Actually just pitched a comic. I wish I could say more about it, but I don't want to say more about it until I know like what's going to happen with it. But it was interesting. It was an interesting experience and nerve-wracking because, like you just said, like trying to make sure that everything that this, you know, story is supposed to encapsulate and making sure that you say it or it's typed up and it's read in a way where the person gets it. And then, of course, the concept art always helps. And then just, you know, hoping that somebody thinks that the story that you think is worth others reading actually is, they too think that it's worth others reading and that those people will pick up and buy more issues so that you can keep telling the story.
It's really nerve-wracking. Yo, for real, like, oh God, it's so stressful, but so worth it. And sometimes, yeah. It really is. But I love existing right now in terms of the technology because we're at a point where like, if someone's not giving you a chance, you can just be like, you know what? Can I curse? Is that a thing? All right, cursing on your show. All right. I just want to make sure.
I haven't cursed yet.
I have such a potty mouth. I just love it because you can be like, you know, fuck you. I'm going to do it myself. You know, I'm going to put together my own, you know, I'm going to write the first issue and I'm going to, you know, get a co-creator and we're going to produce it ourselves and then we'll fucking show you. And that's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's really powerful. That DIY, that shit's amazing. I have a very good friend of mine that does stuff like that and he gets noticed. And also like, have you read the book Black?
Yes.
Have you read that book?
I have.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I love that book. They kickstarted that first issue. They just made it and people were like, yeah, we want that shit. And then, you know, they put it together and then Black Mask, they came to Black Mask and they were like, yeah, this is great. We would love to put this out. And it's like, oh, see, here you go. You like, now you know that people do want to see this. Yeah.
Exactly.
So. And we'll talk later. I'm going to get you when we're off this podcast and we're going to talk about pitching and stuff. Cause also I want to make sure that your stuff gets made. So.
Okay. All right. I will definitely share that with you. Cause there's some other things I wanted to ask you too. I think a lot of it's just me, trying to get in my own way and I got to stop doing that. Okay. So transitioning, we can't like end this episode without talking about the Black Panther purple premiere or purple carpet premiere. I unfortunately fell asleep early that day. Don't ask me. I don't even know. My body just said, yeah, shutting down for the day. Not sure what you're about to do, but we're about to go to sleep. So I was like, okay, fine. So I woke up the next day and like I had seen everything from the Black Panther purple carpet event. And I mean, sheesh.
Holy smokes. Holy smokes. I was like tearing up. I was like, they are so amazing. How are all these people? Everybody brought the thunder. It was unbelievable. And then you had like, so I was staring at a lot of those pictures and videos trying to figure out if those Dora Milaje were real people or like statues because they weren't moving, right? So right? I'm just like, did they get real people? No, those must be wax statues. Are they? Oh my God, they're real people. These women are out there like just, holy smokes. Everyone looked amazing. How is Angela Bassett? How is she not younger than me? Like, I don't understand. She looks younger than me. Like,
I could go on forever. Like, I don't even understand it. I don't even know, like, where to begin with her. I really honestly don't. It's like she's aging backwards.
It's some it's Benjamin just, it's Button. It's not fair. It was amazing to watch all of those Black people looking so powerful and so sure of themselves and so just, they just didn't care. They were like, yeah, no, we know we're awesome. Okay, bye. Janelle Monáe in an actual crown out there. I was like, mm-hmm, yep, that's right. They all looked like royalty. It was incredible.
They did. And I think, I would hope to think that that was the actual theme of it. And like everybody came through and showed out. And I mean, if you didn't know that was the theme, that was the theme. Because clearly, I mean, from Daniel Kaluuya, what he had on was nice, nice little silk. Well, did he have a dashiki on?
No, he had the long with the coat. Oh God. He looked so good.
He looked good. It was nice little velour suit coat on top. I'm probably pretty sure it's not velour, but some crushed velvet. But very expensive, whatever it was, but it was just nice. Chadwick Boseman looked nice.
Oh man. He walked out that like out of the car and just Jadena's Long Live the Chief just started playing in my head. I was like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yep. That's right. Yep. Long Live the Chief. Keep going.
And then you
oh my God.
The little kids from they're not even little anymore, but the kids from Blackish, Miles Brown, the one that plays the one of the other twins, and then Marseille Martin, they looked amazing and so cute incredible. And adorable.
The earring, did you see his earring? I was like, this child is perfect. Okay. I saw Jamie too. It. By the way, did you see the pictures of Jamie as well? Your friend?
I sure did. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, she looked great. I was like, God, goddamn. She did.
And I was like really ready to like be really ignorant over the internet. But I was like, no, I'll just slide in your DMs.
I did it. I was like, hey, you look dope. Because I have no home.
Because I would have, but I was no, because had I been able to catch it the night of, I would have. But I didn't want it to be like the middle of the day, the next day, like just being loud and ignorant. Like I wanted to be with a lot of the stuff. I was like, no, you missed the moment. It's okay. Just retweet and just live through that experience. I don't know how of all days I went to sleep that early. I was really upset with myself.
It's a gift to wake up to, though. You got to wake up to all those amazing pictures. You didn't have to wait. It was just all there.
No, it was all just flip through. Michael B. Jordan. I took myself.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm not blind or dead. I can appreciate him. You know, it's not my cup of tea, but you know what? I'm glad that it's hot. That's it. You know. I took my mom aside. I was like, you have to see this. And my mom is a 67-year-old Puerto Rican woman, and she is a lot cooler than people will give her credit for, but she's definitely still my mom. And I was like, no, mom, you like nerd stuff. It's fine. And she was like, okay, fine. And then she was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Look at Angela. She talks about people like she knows them. Like, she's like, oh, it. They're my friend. Look at Angie. She looks so good. Look at Michael. He's really grown up to be a fine young man. I was like, oh, my God. I have to share this on Facebook. Okay. All right.
But I love it, though, because that is definitely going to be a lot of moms and aunts and grandmas at this Black Panther. When I mean, whatever theater you're at, I'm pretty sure you're going to get a heavy dose of that. And I'm just looking forward to that experience. Yeah, I can't wait either. I can't believe we're like in February, to be quite honest.
I know. Like, oh my God. I was like, we're not going to make it. Oh, we made it. We made it. I'm seeing it 3 days in a row. I've already got my tickets.
Yeah. I have my, so I almost messed up and like would have been scrambling to find a theater because when the tickets went on pre-sale, the theater that I usually frequent, like they didn't have the link available yet. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, maybe they're not doing pre-sale, which is weird, but okay, I'll just, you know, be on the lookout. So finally they sent an email maybe later that day. And I don't think anything about it. I'm just like, you know, this isn't gonna sell out like that. No one, because I'm like, Black people are really late buying stuff all the time. So I'll be fine. So check some mama spirit said, check the website and just see. And when I tell you, I went back and I was like, well, let me see what's going on at 7 o'clock on Saturday, and like at least 50% of the seats were gone. And I was like, oh well, let me go ahead and purchase my tickets before I'm like having to drive all the way out to the boonies to see this, which would mean in some rural white neighborhood to see this. Or I was like, let me go ahead and purchase. And yeah, that would have been terrible. That would have been a horrible. That would have been actually a horror movie. That would have been Get Out too.
Get out the theater. Get out the town. Oh my God. No, I got chills. Like, no. See it in your theater surrounded by your people, which is that's my goal as well. The second showing that I'm going to is a all person of color showing at the Alamo, which is amazing.
Oh, wait, is it all strict women of color showing?
No, it's persons of color.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Person. I'm just like, wait, what?
No. I'm just saying. But, no. Specifically, like they were like, yeah, is, you know, people of color, y'all come. And I was like, I will put down as much money as you want. Someone bought out the theater. That's what it was.
Okay. Because I remember that happened with Wonder Woman, right?
It was just it was all lady. Yeah.
Yeah.
People were so mad. I can't wait to hear people being mad about this. It's just gonna like make me younger. Like, I'm just gonna like, yes, your rage is so nice.
Look at that. I cannot wait until I wonder if they've caught wind of that yet. Whenever they do, I'll be on the lookout, because that is something that'll be worth mocking, because that's funny.
I will let you know. I will send you the link of them being angry. Please let them be.
I'm never crazy about folks tagging me to tweets, but tag me to that. Because that, yeah, I want to see that. That's the petty in me. Man. Oh man,
it's so ridiculous.
I know. And so tomorrow is the day that we're recording this right now. It'll be February 2nd, which means just two Fridays. Well, depending on how you count it, two Fridays away from Black Panther. Or if you're just like, I don't count the actual Friday, and then one more Friday until Black Panther. I guess if you go Thursday, but I hate y'all. I hate everybody that's able to go on a Thursday night, because I can't anymore because I have a child. And think about that. Nobody told me if you get pregnant and you have a child that you know, going to Thursday,
go to Thursday night no more.
No, it dwindles unless you
leave your partner home with the baby and just go.
That's, to be very honest, that is something that I really, really considered. But I was like, well, no, because it'd be late and I'm not going to want to drive home. I'm going to want to tweet on my way home. So I was like, let me chill and just go Saturday.
That's amazing. I'm going to have my hands free.
Like, I wonder if we'll take him back to see. No, I don't trust. Well, we have a child. I don't trust him. I don't know. Maybe Black Panther would be the first movie that he sees. I will do it though. I won't be that I won't be that parent. I'll do it like during the day. So if it's during the day early, you just gonna have to deal. At least I didn't bring them in.
Can I just side note camera two on that? They should make showings where you can bring your kids. Like, I just don't like, I could go on about that forever because it drives me crazy. But like, moms and dads with kids should get to go to the movies too. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, they should. I mean, I guess you would kind of like pick your times or whatever, but you're still going to piss somebody off because your child got a little upset. But it's just like, you know, they got to experience the movies too. Like, they don't get better about sitting down while being in the movie theater unless they, you know, go.
Unless they go.
I think we took him to see.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was going to say, I forgot what we took him to see over the summer. My mom might have took him, but I think he sat for all of like 25, 30 minutes and that's all he could take. So then we just came and got him and that was it.
But that's a long time increments. For a kid that's so young. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But were you
trying to remember what my first movie was? I was going to ask you, what is your first movie that you saw in theaters that wasn't a kid's movie? I think mine was Batman in 89. I was four.
Okay, we're not twins because I was only a one, but my first movie that I do remember seeing that wasn't like a kid's movie was Batman, but it was Batman Forever.
Oh, nice.
Maybe, yeah, I know it's a Batman movie, so it was either like Batman Forever or, yeah, it has been Batman Forever.
The one, yeah, because it was one before that was Returns, and that was still too early, right?
Yeah, so it maybe it had to have been Batman Forever. I just remember, yeah, it was definitely Batman Forever, because I just remember us all going as a family, like everybody. I'm talking about my grandmother, grandfather, mom, dad, brothers, aunts, uncle. I don't know why we all rolled that deep for Batman Forever. Now that I think about it, it's actually kind of funny, but we were like deep as hell in that theater. For some Batman Forever. I'll never forget that.
That's when they tricked us. They tricked us because they were like, Harvey Dent's going to be in it. And we were like, yes, Billy Dee Williams is going to be in it. And then it was not. It was not Billy Dee Williams.
No. That's I remember my dad being very pissed about that too. Because it's all he talked about on the way home.
See, there it is.
Well, I'm going to have to ask my mom and my dad that I remember that. Because I still don't know why we were like so deep. Like, we were deep. We were like... 25 people deep for Batman Forever. That's wild. So don't ask me if we were still living in Chicago, where I'm originally from, in my family, like, I'm pretty sure that probably would have been the case for Black Panther. But Black Panther, with everyone, my relatives that do live down here, I'm like, I already bought my tickets, so we'll have to go see it with y'all as a group like next week, because it's not happening this week. And I don't save seats anymore.
No, it's too much.
Oh, well, I guess you can hear him now.
I can hear your co-star.
He's fussing about something. I don't know what he's fussing about.
It's late. I'm tired too. I understand. Oh man.
No, it's an excited fuss about the iPad or something. Who knows? Okay, but we can, I guess, start wrap things up unless there's anything else you want to talk about.
I'm really bad at talking about myself, which is hilarious. So I'm just gonna say I hope that, you know, you enjoy the next issue of The Wilds as much as you enjoyed the first, and, you know, that it's going to be out in stores on the 28th. So just made it in for Black History Month, by the way. I just, like, just made that was really off. Important to me. Yeah, I was like, God damn it. I want a book that comes out during the 28 days that we get a damn year, okay? That's it.
No, I love that. And I'm like, we were talking about off air. I was like, I had the day of the of February 5th on my mind, but that's the last day to pre-order the issue for that comes out on the 28th. But I would have been, I'm glad we made this clarification for me, because Wednesday, because the 5th isn't even Wednesday. I was just assuming it's Wednesday. It's actually Monday, but I was going to be so upset. My heart was going to be broken. Because I was wanting it that bad. Yeah, I'm really glad that we did, because, I mean, I was going to be a complete shambled mess. But y'all, please, if you haven't already, you can definitely pre-order the first issue of The Wilds, and also second, and also the third. I just retweeted that information from your page onto mine, but I'll definitely have that in the show notes so that you can do that. And I am really, really recommending you all at least pick up the first issue and give it a try. I personally don't think you'll be let down, and I stand by that. So, you know, got a problem, just tweet me and we can I can gift you gift the fuck out of you, so we could just do that. But thank you so much for joining me, and I tried to promise you that we'd be done in 30 minutes, but I knew it was a lie in my heart. I knew that wasn't gonna happen. So but I thought I would tell you that lie to ease it on, so you wouldn't be looking at the clock like, wow, we've been talking for a long time. But I've enjoyed this conversation. I really have.
This has been amazing. And it is, when you asked me to come on your show, I fangirled out a little bit, because I know that we were mutuals on Twitter, but you just, whatever you say something, I'm like, how does she know? How does she know what I'm thinking at any given time? This person is amazing. So I'm constantly with my wife, I'm like, look at this. This is hilarious. Look at this. She's like, yes, it is. She's great.
Well, I appreciate it. I am trying my best to internalize these compliments, because I'm very bad at that. But I do really, really appreciate that. That means a lot. It really does.
Can I actually do a shout out for your other podcast on here? Because Misty Knight's Uninformed Afro has changed my life. So y'all need to go listen to that if you don't, because I do not do my dishes. I do not do anything without that in my ears. It's so good. It's so great.
I appreciate that. We're ready to come back for season 3 and a couple subsequent seasons. We're going to try something new. I don't want to tell anybody just yet, but it will involve indie creators. So wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So where can the people find you, your work, anything that helps them, you know, discover this wonderful writer that you are?
I'm on Twitter for half the day at Definitely Vita. I post about my work on my Twitter all the time, and there's a thread right now that's my pinned tweet all about The Wilds. And I will get around to doing a website soon so that everyone can find everything in one place. I can make it easy for people. But yeah, Twitter. I'm, you know, like every other millennial, I have my phone on me at all times, and that's where I am.
I mean, hey, keeping it real. I mean, that's true. I'm going to bug you about that website, because somebody was bugging me about a website. So then in turn, make sure that's a gift that keeps on going. So I'll bug you about that.
Thank you. I need the nudge.
I will definitely be there to nudge. All right, guys. Well, this has been another episode of Lemonade Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed. If you haven't already, there's a Patreon that still exists for the podcast, and I'm going to be starting up Golden Girls episodes for patrons. Now, what those episodes will entitle, I'm not sure yet, but it'll just be me yammering about the Golden Girls and probably making comic book references and, you know, all that fun stuff. So if you haven't already, head on over to Patreon, and just thank you all for your continued support. Third episode of 2018, and so far, so good. So until next time, I'll talk to you all later. Bye.